Welcome to Breaking Form, a podcast of poetry and culture. I'm Aaron Smith.
And I am James Allen Hall. For those listening for the first time, we do this show in segments.
We do literary games.
We revisit books that we love.
We gossip.
We do. We interview.
We shade.
We laugh.
And we are not for everyone. Mm-hmm.
Hey, Aaron, we haven't seen each other for a minute.
No, but we have had some really terrific phone calls. Sometimes, ladies, we have to step off and remember our friendship. And then we come back on
right.
And we are podcasters.
That's right. We haven't seen each other since we recorded this episode with Carl Phillips.
Ooh, nice segue.
Thank you. Carl Phillips is a Leo, as we found out when we played Philip These Holes. He has the same birthday as Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yes. And Carl actually confirms in a public space his hatred of me.
Well, yeah, and we get to the bottom of that.
Yes. So no one has to worry. Carl doesn't hate me. And it's actually a really fun. This whole conversation is fun and sweet. And I just don't know how you'll be able to listen and not just adore Carl as a person and his intellect and just his thoughtfulness and just wonderful discussion in general.
Carl Phillips is the author of 16 books of poetry, including most recently, Then the War, which is new and selected poems. He also has two books of prose on poetry, Coin of the Realm, Essays on the Art and Life of Poetry from Grey Wolf, and The Art of Daring, Risk, Restlessness, and Imagination, which is fabulous. That book is so terrific, from also Grey Wolf, 2014.
Grey Wolf, that up and coming press.
Yeah, man, I can't wait to see what they're going to do, that upstart.
I think they have a GoFundMe.
I think they have an OnlyFans. Yes.
So Carl Phillips, why do you hate me? That's the question. Why do you
I heard the episode. I listened to the episode where you decided this and I thought, like, where is this coming from? It's like, what? I know his poems. I like his poems. I admire his poems. It's like, what? And it's like, I don't think we've met. So what's this? What's the deal, Aaron?
Well, what's unveiling for it before you is how crazy I am.
So, yeah, that's clear.
Which if you listen to the episode, you know, it's part of its humor, obviously. Part of it's because we've never interacted. And I feel like, with gay poets, you sort of do cross paths. Mm. But I think the real insecurity that I had was that when I was very young, I wrote a review of Writing Westward for Lambda Literary. And it was a positive review, but I don't think I wrote the review well. You know, like, I think I was just like ready to leave and go like suck dick or something. You know, I was really...
Oh,
I'll be right back.
Yeah. Even though it was a positive review, I just felt like I didn't live up to the book. And then in my head over time, I'm like, I bet he saw that and thought I was stupid. And it's like, so some of it's me joking with James. But then I also thought I really wanted that review to be better than it was. So that's probably just become this like joke in my head, you know.
Where was this review?
In Lambda Literary. And Charles Flowers got me to do it. And like, I just didn't want to write reviews, but I love the book. And then it was funny. It's like, and I think once, then we were on Twitter, which I'm not on anymore. And I may have followed you and you didn't follow me back, but that's who could keep up with all of that.
You do.
Shall I clear up all these problems? Let me just tell you. So the thing is, first of all, it's possible that I didn't see the review, but it's also possible I did. But like when I see reviews, I mean, I don't know what the protocol is. Like, I never write back to people unless I, you know them personally or something. Mm-hmm. So then I think, oh, okay. And if I didn't like a review, I would remember it, because I do remember the ones very clearly that there's certain people I think, okay, it's a good thing I've never met them because I might become violent. And so, you know, there's that.
Now we're getting into Breaking Form territory. Like, ew.
So you're not one of those people I think that. But yeah. As for Twitter, I mean, I have to tell you, it's part of my Twitter training, and it's probably bad. My partner, who's a millennial, When I first got onto Twitter, he said, now, just so it's clear, you don't want to seem needy. And he said, you should never follow more than, I think it was more than 10% of the people. So like he said, if you have 1,000 followers, you don't want to be following 2,000. You want to be following actually fewer than 100. That's what his idea. And I thought, well, okay, what does it matter? And he said, you'll seem like you're thirsty or whatever. But also it's because Twitter is so, you know, there's a lot. So I realized like the more people I follow, the more stuff I'm going to see. And I'll never be able to get on with my day.
There's just so many times I can read good bones on Twitter. I'm sorry.
What I like about my Twitter feed is it's almost all people talking about poems they love. And like, wow, get a load of this poem. Or, you know, someone will, or the episode from your podcast. And I feel like, okay, that's how I discover new writers or someone's got a new book coming out. And I like reading reviews like in The Guardian, things like that, that are there. So for me, it's like this curated literary space because I don't really leave my house. So basically, and I don't have friends. So I have to find out about poetry somewhere.
Yeah. We have more in common than we might have known. I don't leave my house and I have no friends in Massachusetts.
You see, we may end up being besties.
Honestly, I think many of us gay poets who were coming up sort of underneath you can look at you and see you as such an inspiration. So in all seriousness, I really have always admired your work and I've never found your work to be trendy. It's almost like you've been working in a trajectory. James and I are reading, you know, we've kind of really focused on the new poems and then the war. And one thing that really stuck out to me was almost this really gutsy distrust of language, where you say, like in Of California, that's the trouble with words. Soon almost anything sounds true. Why not say so? Why this need to name things based on what they remind us of? It's like this obligation. That's Enchanted Bluff. And then that the gods must rest. Is that true? Do you believe it's true? I feel like all the way through this, you're questioning like naming and language. You may disagree with everything that I've just said.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just kind of, I never know what to say when people are talking to me about my poems. So, but especially when they're saying nice things.
And I will need a name of those reviewers.
Have you ever met William Logan, for instance?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
No, and I never want to. Well, all I can say about my poems is, I mean, all I'm going to say, I suppose, since I could talk forever, is first of all, thanks. I appreciate what you say. I do feel as if I stumbled into this poetry thing. It wasn't a thing, unlike most people I know who are poets, who planned on being poets, knew that this is what they want to do. I didn't. I thought it was a hobby. I didn't even know it was an option that this could be like your life. And so for me, it's been this constant, it's a personal trying to reckon with, I don't know how to stay alive. And and it's certainly my first book. I always say that I feel like my first book, the choice was suicide or to write these poems. I didn't consciously think that, but I was living in this closeted, terrified world. And I did think that suicide was the most reasonable option. And then started writing these poems. And so I've always thought of myself as writing, not just from a life, but for a life. And so like when people sometimes complain, like, how come Carl's so prolific? How come he has so many books? Even though I notice they don't say this about a lot of white writers. Just gonna throw that out there. Mm-hmm. Like nobody seems to say that about, I don't know, Ashbery or Louise Glick seems to be having books all the time. You know, lots of people. But I think, sure, of course, because you're not writing in order to publish. You're just writing because this is how you make your next step forward for a while. And it makes a sort of wedge of possibility. And so I appreciate what you say. So then the questioning part, I think that's because I think it takes a lot of courage to make any kind of real statement and to believe in it and say that it's true. So I feel as if the only way we can do that is by constantly questioning ourselves instead of assuming that we are right and the way that we see the world is the way. But I think that within the war, I noticed too that there's a little more of that. And I noticed that most of those poems are written in the sort of post-2016, you know, that era of when truth has become thrown out the window. Reality is whatever your truth is your truth. And precision is the opposite of what people care about. And for me, it's essential. You know, it's like, I'm not just a human being. I'm a particular human being with certain things, but then I'm not just a queer Black human being, because that too needs to be refined. But I feel like the world in general, especially the marketing world, thrives on flattening that out and sort of so that there's something that anybody can sort of say, this is a good flavor. And so, yeah, I don't know. I was texting a bit with James about this recently and thinking that it's just a problem with art in general, but it's always been that way. And so it's not like a new phenomenon, but this aspect of not caring as much about the truth and just throwing careless information out is something that's particular to our age, I think. And we have the media to do it very easily. It's so easy to just tweet anything. I was reading something last night and I don't know what it was, but then someone said, this is actually not correct. And they showed the article that proved this person wrong. But meanwhile, all these people have responded in anger, thinking it was true. And it's almost like people are just there to start something. And I don't know.
I think there's a little bit of a trend right now in poetry. And if you read some of these poems, there are these lines that sound so beautiful and like they're saying something so deep. And then when you really look at them, you're like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, no one's really saying anything. Like, that's not, trust your image. You know, like there's an image that's gorgeous, but you have to do that follow-up statement. And I've always thought, and I think I said this in one of our episodes, that you're so good at statement. When you need to do it, you've chosen it. And I think that's what I always appreciate. Like when you say the thing, it's going to matter. And then also when you talk about people saying you write too many books, I do feel like a Carl Phillips book is an event. I do buy them in hardback if I can fangirl for a second, always. But I also like that you're not afraid to publish a short book. I love that Reconnaissance is short. And I like love that you're like, this is the book.
Well, the thing is, I don't think I've published a book that is more than 70 pages ever. And I mean, I've never turned in a manuscript that's been more than 40 pages ever, typed pages. And then it turns into whatever they turn into. And so that's another thing that intrigues me when people talk about this. If they actually, like, sure, I suppose, like, it's not like I don't have enough to do a 150-page book. But I find that kind of a book really difficult to read. I feel as if I, as with readings, I don't need to hear someone read for an hour. I know what they do, and I want to, you know, a good 25-minute reading is excellent for me. And so I think, yeah, having a lot of books, but how many words are there in these books? And how big is the font? But also, what does it matter? It's like cock size. I mean, who cares? What does it do? What does it do? Is it a good cock? Yeah. Can it work? Mm-hmm. And does it give pleasure?
Does it feel good? Yeah. Right. And, can you savor it?
Right. And you know, and is it 14 inches? And how do I feel about that?
Oh, God.
Right.
I'm trying to get into the spirit of your podcast. You see, I can get there.
She's talking our language. Yes. Of course, James is like, they're never too long. So somebody hand James a towel. Yeah.
But I respect that too.
Sure. I can think of things that are too long or too much. Yeah, sure. It just doesn't come in pizza or penis. Oh my. I had a thought, and now it's completely flushed out of my head. I'm blushing.
Oh well.
And he's like, oh, my favorite thing in the world. Yeah, he's on his knees. Yeah.
God, I'm already hungry again.
Well, that was a quick podcast. Thanks. I could entertain you and fill you in on things.
Well, I also love too when we came to see you and Richie Hoffman read, and First of all, I love that you mentioned right off trying on your first harness, which
that was amazing.
I knew immediately, like, I love Carl Phillips because I love that you mentioned your first harness. But you also spawned a more serious episode for us, because I know that you had a poem censored by the Academy of American Poets. And after you talked about it, James had the same thing, and our episode Banned, for anyone who's listening, can go hear it.
Yeah.
And that got James to share his story and like how irresponsible the Academy was. And we know they hate us now, because if it got back to them and it did, and like, oh, well, that's the way it goes. Do better. And you won't, you know, we won't talk about you. So I was just curious, since you were really the jumping off point and we talked about it happening to you, would you maybe tell us briefly like what happened to you and your poem and how it was banned? I think that's the word you used for the by the Academy of American Poets.
Yeah, what happened was, and it's not like, well, okay, I'll just say what happened. So yeah, Paul Guest was the one who invited me to submit for whichever month he was doing. And this is, I don't know, a few years ago, 5 years ago. And so anyway, I sent this poem, All the Love You've Got, and he immediately said, this is great, I'm fine. So, and let's say that was in, I don't know, August of 1 year. Then come around like May or something of the following year, I was told by someone else from the Academy, oh, we know that this was taken, but actually we can't run it, and, you know, do you have something else? And so I asked why. And it kind of went back and forth. And I finally got them to put Jan Benka and I forget who the guy was who was in charge of media stuff, but for them both to be on a phone call. And they said that they said the problem was that they were syndicated in some way in certain newspapers, and that they had a high school kind of audience in mind, and that they had to think about that. But they still wouldn't say what the problem is. And I said, is it that there are two men fucking? And so it's like, well, yeah, that's an instance, and that's one of the problems. And I said, oh, what about at the end too, where the word cock appears? And they said, well, that's another one. And I pointed out that high school kids fuck. I was a high school teacher. I know they fuck. I know they use the word cock. And also, I wasn't promoting this kind of behavior. It's not that kind of a poem. And if anything, it argues for a kind of inclusivity and tenderness about however people find pleasure. And so, and I think they also were creeped out that it was an older person, a king in the poem, observing boys. The king even says they seem too young to know about fucking. So what does that mean? And I said at the time, I was really quite shocked because as I understand it, Jen is herself queer, and that it seemed to me that the point of the Academy is, and for poetry, is to teach and disturb and open up ways of thinking about ourselves, including our bodies and blah, blah, blah. So at the end of it, because I said, well, it's censorship, that's what it is. And they wouldn't answer. And so the compromise was, they said, well, we can put that poem in like on our website. And then do you have another poem that we will run for Paul Guest's month? And so I came up with another one. In fact, the one that has muscled animal in it. And at the time I said to them, is this going to be a problem? Because there's blood, there's violence, there's, you know, people sleeping with dogs in a bed. And anyway, at which point I think they thought I was just ridiculous. But anyway, so fine. And that's what happened. But I did say to them, I said, every time I read this poem, I'm going to make a point of telling the story and mentioning the Academy. And I did that at my launch at the Iowa Writers Program in February. And it always sparks this interesting discussion, because it's like, and it's also problematic to me too, because I was a chancellor of the Academy for whatever, 7 years. And I guess I wouldn't have been a chancellor if I thought it was that kind of an institution. So I just hate that. I mean, it's you know, it's not 1975. And so, you know, it just seems like, what is shocking? I am not the most shocking writer out there. And anyway,
I always think of you as the John Waters of American poetry. So
I don't know how I feel about that.
No.
I would think of it as a huge compliment. Yeah.
He's just weird.
Yeah.
Well, he's very nice. I've met him. He seems
very
nice.
Have you really met him?
Yeah. I was seated at a table with him for the National Book Awards many years ago when I was a finalist. And I think he was a finalist or else he was a guest of somebody who was. And so we were all at the same table. And I was with a then new boyfriend, former boyfriend now. And this was really a big deal that just the fact that I brought him to the National Book Awards. And then we sat down, he said, "That's John Waters across the room." And I said, "Yes." I'm like, who else would it be? And it's like, not just across the room, but across the table. So it was a little score moment.
That's lovely.
Yeah. But I moved on from the relationship anyway.
With John and also the former boyfriend. Did you all see that news story of the guy who broke up, or this woman broke up with this guy, and so he pasted her number around town and said, "Call and do your best Chewbacca impersonation for $100. So she kept getting calls with people going, you know, like.
I mean,
it's so immature, and also I love it.
As we do love a lot of things that are immature and ridiculous.
Yes.
Though no one would think that about me. Everyone thinks I'm, you know, serious Sally, and you know, can't. Well, one of the reviewers whose names I remember said that I would be incapable of ordering a taco without transforming it into a metaphysical experience. And I thought, I order tacos every week. And I do not transform them into metaphysical experiences. Like, who thinks that? But they were saying that there was no humor in my poems, and therefore, apparently, there was no humor in my life. And it's like, why do people think that the person is the poems exactly? I mean, you're showing some part of you, but not everything.
Mm-hmm. And first of all, tacos are a metaphysical experience. I'm just going to say that. That's really fucked up. That's kind of fucked up.
Do you want to say their name?
Put it this way. It's the only time I've had a full review in the New York Times.
Wow.
It's the only time. I remember being so excited about, you know, the publisher told me, "Oh, this is coming out." It's like, "Oh my God, I've made it. And then I was driving when they said, "Here it is." And because I hate to admit it, but I was looking at my phone while driving. Mm-hmm. And I opened it up and I could immediately tell that this was not a good review. And I almost ran off the road. And it was a moment where I stopped and I told myself, you know, Carl, this is proof you are taking reviews too seriously if you're going to almost die because of this. And then, you know, it was very disturbing because, of course, everyone sees it. You know, and then you get all the emails of people saying, "Oh, you know, ignore it, you know, good, it's still publicity." It's like, but I can still see most of the lines of it. And, you know, the ways in which it was also mentioned that I never have mentioned, you'd never see the words boxer shorts or Schenectady in Carl Phillips's poems. I think that was in the opening paragraph. And I thought, why would I mention Schenectady? I've never been there. I don't know anything about it. And, but I also don't think I've ever mentioned St. Louis, but I live here. And and I don't wear boxer shorts. And I don't seem to be involved with anyone who does. Mm. So they're not super on my radar.
So what kind of underwear do you wear?
Are we going there this early?
Welcome, everybody, to the Fact Check.
The fabulous Carl Phillips Fact Check.
What a great episode.
Really, really was. Yeah.
And if you didn't like it, well, then you're dumb.
Yes, that's true. just a few things to fact check. As he said, he served as Chancellor of the Academy of American Poets from 2006 to 2012. So 7 years, he was exactly right.
And he said that he wouldn't have done it had he known. That's all I'm going to say. He said it.
And he mentions John Waters. John Waters has authored 7 books and has an 8th coming out this September, a novel called Liar Mouth.
Is it already out?
Yep. Yeah. So the novel's called Liar Mouth, A Feel Bad Romance, which I think if John Waters didn't author that, Aaron Smith would have.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, and John Waters has not been a finalist for the National Book Award, but he did host the National Book Foundation's 5 Under 35 in 2011, which is a lead up to the National Book Award ceremony. So it was probably the 2011 ceremony Carl mentions attending when he was a finalist for Double Shadow and he met John Waters there.
We're not going to link to Carl's only full page review in the New York Times, but we'll just leave it if you Google Schenectady.
And tacos and Carl Phillips. Yeah, you can find it yourself. It's pretty horrible.
Yeah, it's just like, it's me. There's something someone is like, you know, an axe to grind.
Right.
I mean, nobody really reads that person's poems, so it's whatever.
I didn't even know that person was a poet. See you next time on Breaking Form, the Shade Edition. Hey everyone, if you like today's Breaking Form, please go to the Apple Store and review us with 5 stars. Follow us on Instagram at Breaking Form Pod, and be sure to check the show notes for references. And remember, we're not for everyone.
And is it 14 inches? And how do I feel about that?